The one idea I have to tell you or propose you is re-enchantment. The idea is that going through the paradigm shift is bringing you, bringing me, to an experience of re-enchantment. How did that happen for me? First, I had a shock. I had a shock that the modern, rational, male-oriented, deductive, rational paradigm was not working for me anymore. Crisis. Dismantling of my ego, of my certitude. Crisis. Second, after the crisis, light. I discovered that after modernity there is something. Wow! Wow! I discovered that modernity is a liberation movement who became a tunnel. And I went out of the tunnel. And I discovered nature, light, colors. I discovered that I could make a synthesis between my body, my mind, my soul, and my intelligence. Amazing. First impression of liberation. But that's not all. Unfortunately, after light came shadow, because I discovered then that I was still rational, deductive, patriarchal, and not coherent. Wow. But there was work to do. Work on reconnection between my body, my intelligence, my soul, my feelings, and the meaning of my life. And that's exciting. That's re-enchantment. And what happens is that the energy that has been foreclosed into your soul for centuries, modernity has put the soul on side. Suddenly the energy comes from deep in your soul and invades the whole of your being. That's re-enchantment. Five, I'm not alone. I'm not alone. I thought I was alone. No. We are millions. In the European Commission, we used Paul Rey's questionnaire, and we found out that probably between 50 or 70 million Europeans are shifting in silence. Or perhaps 20%, 30% of every European, the 80 other percent waiting to see what the others do. But it's moving quickly. And in that group, 60% are women. Reenchantment can be and is the transition from modern to transmodern. And in that, the business is really a mission.
I was there when the Dalai Lama was in Amsterdam, and I was really impressed also. He put on the counterweight of competition, he put compassion, which is very beautiful. Now, Baha'u'llah is the founder of the Baha'i Faith, and he says the next lines. He says, draw thyself from the realms of contradiction into the retreats of oneness. So draw yourself, thyself, from the realms of contradiction into the retreats of oneness. If you would put this principle in government, no, in politics, in your company, in your family, that the principle of unity is the leading principle, then I think the whole world would look quite differently. And then to stop my talk, work for me is a mean to develop the spiritual qualities, and as a leader to help others do the same. So there's a big task to do for us to educate our new business leaders, our young professionals, to go in the direction of maybe a shifting in leadership and moral leadership, and not just in leadership and management and organizing, etc. I don't know, when you hire people, I'm a business person, but when I hire somebody, everybody in Holland, in the Netherlands, they have their grades or their diplomas. But that's not the issue. But where do you look at them? What's that person like? What does he do? How is he acting or reacting? How is his trustworthiness, his kindness, his friendliness? How can he, is he a person who likes to cooperate with people? That are more important issues when you look in your business and you want to change your business.
My work for 30 years has been in the sustainable industries and the organic foods industry and the solar energy industry and investment banking around those industries. My on-ramp into this work came from the part of me that didn't work, and the amount of anger I had about the world that was outside that I took into myself and really wasn't constructive. So as Sander mentioned earlier, myself wasn't working all that well, and I had all these great ideas that were seemingly working in the outside world, and that contradiction led me into a serious bout of depression, which I couldn't seem to come out of using traditional medical practice. And that then led me to, because I had no spiritual practice whatsoever from the time I left the Lutheran Church when I was age 12 till I was 40. So I was a very rational being trying to come up with rational solutions to a world that I thought had some problems. And so for me, I think the personal part of this story is that there's a lot of on-ramps into this conversation. And we get here in many ways. Some of us might be born into the issues of our spirits, and some of us might have to just hit the wall like I had to, and then continue and open myself up to spiritual practice that then transformed me and made myself a more whole person, so then I could practice business in a much more successful and whole way. And if I've had one epiphany out of all this, is that it's a rare being that simply can walk in a holistic way without practice. I know that when I watched and I sat before the conference that was in New York and the Winter Olympics were going on, how many skaters would come out and the commentary, this person's been practicing since she was 4 years old. She wasn't born a skater. She practiced. Well, I would posit that part of the work of this is the reflective process, the walking in the woods, the practicing of compassion, however we do it, and we all do it in so many different ways. But it's unlikely, for me anyway, that unless I work at it a bit, that the progress continues. I think one of the wonderful things I've learned over this last couple of years is that there's a tremendous desire amongst all kinds of people to just ask the question without judgment, just with an open mind and open heart, what are you thinking about in these subjects? And I find most people will talk, regardless whether they're a Christian fundamentalist in the United States or a new immigrant from Islam. And people have a desire to connect. But part of the other beauty of creating the conference was that we truly created it between Europe and the U.S. And I'm really indebted to both Marcello and to Sander and to Ermano and so many other Europeans that helped set the tone and helped us as Americans realize that we don't know it all, which sometimes we like to think we do.
70% of people in their job if you would ask them, and how about your personal, as you say in Dutch, employing, like most Dutch companies have in their social statements, de optimale ontplooiingsmogelijkheden voor onze medewerkers. Are you really taking that seriously? And 70% would answer in plain Dutch, God, meneer, break me the back niet open. You know, I work until 5 o'clock and then I go home and I enjoy life with my children and my sports club, etc. But selling stamps at the post office, do you really mean that your question about personal growth matter at all? My respect for people who are in a work situation where it doesn't seem to matter is too large to shout at them and say that they are wrong. So the question is, how to transfer those spiritual values that are in each and every one of us, so that working life, which is half of our life, becomes a breeding ground for that. I don't know how to do it, and I don't want to give it up. But I really don't know the real answer. I only know that if in companies all these personal values are squeezed out of people, we treat each other in a way which is below the level we owe each other. But how to do it, apart from issuing ethical codes, and I know, having worked there, that those ethical codes were made because someone said, you know, we also need an ethical code. I read an article about, you know, and we need an ethical code. And within 3 months later, there was an ethical code. So it was, I won't say imposed by outside, but it was never the product of really inside reflection. Leaving aside how to do it properly without becoming business Billy Graham's that push the air out of the lungs of people who think differently.
My journey to spirituality just starts when I was when I was young, in the former century, and when I was an Olympic swimmer and medalist. My first medal for swimming had the sign Mens Sana in Corpore Sano, a healthy mind in a healthy body. And if you are going to have a top sports career, you know everything about the interaction between the mind and the body. And it puzzled, it intricates me so much that when I was a student at the university, I studied a couple of years Chinese and Japanese, and from that moment on I was just a lifelong student for Buddhism. And I always told my colleagues that is my journey to spirituality. And it is a long life search to have harmony, as you said, Peter, so well, to have harmony in thought, word, and deed, and to become a complete person. But it is so difficult to interact that with policies. Once I went, and some people who read this booklet already knows it, once I went to a Zen monastery in Japan, and I stayed there for 1.5 weeks, and I did Zazen, and I was so much enriched, and I was full of what I learned. It was absolutely marvelous. And I stayed there till the very late day that I could stay there, and then I had to come to hurry to the parliament, and I came at Tuesday morning, 8:30 at the airport, and 10:30, I was in the political faction, where there was a full debate on financial deficits, on wages, on percentage of financial, everything. And I was just listening to it, and then all of a sudden I couldn't hold myself, and I had made an intervention. I said, Mr. Chairman, what I miss is spirituality. And then they looked like Bishop Comtzo. Now the white coats will come and take you to the clinic. So it's really very difficult. But I think that it's even politicians can't act if they don't have a personal commitment with all the sentient beings. A politician, somebody in politics cannot function if there is not an idealism or name it a fundamental guiding principle. that there is something else than just no nonsense politics. And I had the very privilege, well, no, many of my colleagues just deny it publicly, but nevertheless, I had the privilege to host His Holiness the Dalai Lama when in 1990, yes, he had a meeting with the parliament. The Chinese ambassador was very much against it and just protested and tried to prevent it, but nevertheless, His Holiness came to parliament. And I made a large invitation to all my colleagues, and it was bombful. How do you say this? There were so, well, almost everybody was there. And for the first time, and that is really historic, you know, the House of Parliament is a house of discussion, of debate, of words and nothing but words. And now we start the meeting with His Holiness after beautiful music, live music, with 4 minutes of meditation. And for the first and unique time, the Parliament in the Netherlands, on the guidance of His Holiness, was for 4 minutes absolutely silent. And then I knew that all my colleagues, who even up till now just talk about this very special meeting, were longing to have more growth in spirituality. I think the key word for me, at least, but I'm not a professor. For me, the key word is integrity. I think that with everything, you can blame the system, you can blame your boss, you can blame everything else. But first and foremost, all, in my opinion, you have to blame yourself if you don't like to try and do very hard your best to live up to your own integrity. And you don't need booklets, you don't need anything, you just have to listen inside. And maybe that is the reason why it is, in my opinion, so very important not to be part only of the outside world, where all this sound, all this speed, all this, well, you know, all extroverts is there, but that you've got to find the balance by coming to the inside as well, and just listen to your own silence, because then you know the rules, the values of your integrity.
I have to come back to one of my walks in the woods and remember that I realized one day that to generate change, the only way to begin the process of influencing change is to accept everything exactly as it is right now. In fact, if I resist the way things are right now, then I generate, or I am generating, fear of what might happen from this moment right now. And that just adds to the sum of fear in the world today and doesn't generate what's in our hearts, which is love. So the paradox, perhaps, of creating a better world is actually for me to accept things exactly as they are right now and know that inevitably, if we express what's in our hearts, then transformation is inevitable. Maybe I could finish with one of my favorite stories. Chief executive, London, multinational corporation, has his road to Damascus experience in a seminar many years ago. And so he decides that his contribution to the world and his service of fellow humankind is to head for the hills and become enlightened so that he may come back and enlighten others. So he leaves London and he heads for the Himalayas and he finds his monk, his master, after many weeks of traveling. And he sits at the feet of his master and he learns and he awakens and he is enlightened some 10 years later. And one day he decides it's time to return to the world. And so he returns to New York. And he's walking through the streets of Manhattan, and there only a few hundred yards into his walk, he encounters an ice cream parlor. And in the parlor, he sees so many varieties of ice cream, 57 different varieties. He's very impressed. And he stands and he very profoundly looks down at the ice cream and he says to the vendor, "Please, make me one with everything." And so the vendor takes the cone and he takes the ice cream and sure enough he puts a little bit of everything into one. And he hands the ice cream to our enlightened chief executive. And he hands over his $20. And he's licking his ice cream and still in paradise somewhere up here. And after a few moments he turns to the vendor and he says, "Excuse me, could I have my change?" And the vendor looks up very profoundly and he says, "Ah, change must come from within."